All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, our shiur tonight is sponsored by Mrs. Rosalie Sklar, in memory of her husband, Dr. Manfred Sklar, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah.
Okay.
So we begin with, I think, a very strange and obscure episode in the parasha that very often goes overlooked, but that I'd like to really spend the entirety of our shiur focusing on. So the Torah says, Vayelech Ruvain b'mei kitzir chitim. So of course we know, Parshas Vayetze, just a little bit by background, all the Parshas of Bereishis are chock full of information. But Vayetze really includes incredible amounts of transition, because remember, the Parsha begins with Yaakov Avinu ultimately leaving the familial home. And then by the time we're at the end of the Parsha, Yaakov Avinu already has 11 children. So obviously a lot happens over the course of these couple of chapters. And nestled here in the middle is a very strange episode. So again, number one, Vayelech Ruvain b'mei kitzir chitim, Vayimtso dudoim basode. So it was in the days of the wheat harvest, and young Reuven, we'll discuss how young Reuven was. Young Reuven goes out into the field, and he finds dudoim. We'll define what dudoim are actually a little bit later on in the shir. Vayave osam el Leah imo. He brings the dudoim to his mother Leah. Vatomer Rachel Leah, tnili mi dudoim benech. So Rachel Imenu says to Leah Imenu, please Leah, would you mind sharing the dudoim with me? Vatomer lo, hamat kachtech esishi, v'lakachta gam es dudaibani. So Leah Imenu, incredulous over the fact that Rachel could even ask for this. So you, it's not enough that you took my husband. Now you also want to take my dudaim. Vatomer Rachel, so Rachel says to Leah, lochein yishkav imach halayla, Tachas duda ebeneich. Therefore, okay, you're right. Therefore, Yaakov will sleep with you. Yaakov will go and spend the night in your tent, literally in payment or in reciprocity for the dudaim of your son. So obviously, this whole episode is problematic on multiple levels. But on the most basic level, what does it mean? What is actually occurring over here? And perhaps more importantly, what's the question we always ask ourselves? What are we to learn from it? Because remember, if there's one thing we know about the Torah, it's what? The Torah is not a storybook. Torah is not, and again, the truth is when you look at Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim, that's a little bit easier to appreciate because at the end of the day, there are very few stories. But even in Bereishis, which is chock full of stories, the stories are not there for stories' sake. The stories are there to impart on us lessons, ideas, and ideals. So we have to ask ourselves, A, what exactly is unfolding in this story? And B, what is the meaning or what is the contemporary lesson of this story? So we're going to begin with a simple approach. Now, the simple approach is actually not simple at all. Rav Shamshon Afar Hirsch in number 2 gives a dramatically different insight into this story. And Rav Hirsch writes again, look at 2a. This business of the mandrakes. Now, he defines dudaim as, there should be sheets out. There's still additional sheets. Good, on the chair? Okay, on all the chairs, good. So Rav Hirsch writes over here, he defines this as mandrakes. So we'll discuss exactly what the dudaim are. This business of the mandrakes has again and again been taken by the commentators in a serious vein. But it is quite unthinkable that Leah, whose whole life was devoted to gain the complete love of her husband, could possibly have uttered the words, you have got my man, and now you want my bunch of flowers also, in any serious sense. As if the possession of a few flowers could come into the very slightest consideration in connection with or in comparison with the possession of a beloved husband. Rather, the whole matter appears as an instance to show a state of the two sisters living together in the most confidential intimacy. While Jacob is out in the fields, the two wives sit together. His evenings he spends alternatively with each one of them. Paragraph B. Reuven, who was still a little boy, brings some wild flowers to his mother. "Give me some of them," says Rachel. "What sauce to ask for my precious flowers?" says Leah jokingly. But of course she gives her some. That is evident from Rachel's lachin. "Now," says Rachel, "because you have been so kind, he shall come to you this evening." The kachtech esishi can also quite likely refer just to that day. Last evening, you had... So Rav Hirsch takes a dramatically different understanding of this. Rav Hirsch says, what's the whole point of this story? To tell you how beautifully the sisters get along. You might have thought that this is a family filled with tension. You might have thought that this is a marriage and a relationship filled with animosity. No, no, no. What does the Torah give us? The Torah shows us how the sisters coexist beautifully. They joke around with each other. They tease each other a little bit. And the family of Yaakov Avinu lives in a state of ongoing shalom. So you can imagine that Rav Hirsch is all alone on this island. Right? No one else agrees with this, simply because you have to understand something also. We know that from a biblical perspective, polygamy is permitted. Right? Midoraisa, biblically, a man is permitted to marry more than one wife. But Chazal already understood, you know what the Chazal call a second wife? A tsara. Sarah. Now again, that's not a shtach to the second wife. That is Chazal's statement about the concept of bringing more than one wife into a marriage. It is never going to work. You have two women vying for the attention of the same exact man. It's a recipe for disaster. So already again, you know, there's a cherem now. There's a cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom made a number of different charamim, we normally translate acherim as an excommunication, but the truth is that it also applies to certain rabbinic edicts. So Rabbeinu Gershom made a couple of very famous charamim. For example, Rabbeinu Gershom says, you're not allowed to open up someone else's mail. That's a charam to Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom also said, interestingly enough, that you can't marry more than one woman. As an aside, by the way, the charam actually expired. Just as an aside, but again, it's become obviously accepted within Minhag Yisrael that obviously we stick to one spouse and it works, hopefully. So the idea over here that Rav Hirsch comes along and says, and again, it's very novel. Rav Hirsch says the point of the whole story is don't read more drama into the story that's necessary. Was it difficult for two sisters to be married to the same man? Did the whole marriage unfold under difficult and strange circumstances? Remember, Rachel was supposed to marry Yaakov. She gives the signs to Leah, and Leah comes in, and Leah's having children, and Rachel is not. You're going to think that this is mamish, a recipe for disaster? Torah gives us this little episode to say, everything is hunky-dory. Everything is wonderful, everybody's getting along, and even the co-wives manage to have a beautiful, harmonious relationship. Okay, that's Rav Hirsch. But let's take this in a little bit of a different direction. I think we're going to understand this story in a dramatically different fashion. But to understand this story, we need a little bit of background. So the Torah says in number 3, what I think is probably one of the most heartbreaking psukim in the entire Torah. The Torah says, Vayovo gam el Rachel. So remember again, we know the episode, as I just alluded to before. Yaakov Avinu agrees, makes an agreement with Lavan, that he's going to work for 7 years, he's going to marry Rachel. And what happens, again, ultimately, Lavan switches his daughters, Yaakov Avinu ends up marrying Leah, and then the only way for him to marry Rachel is to agree to sign up for another 7 years of labor. So the Torah says, Yaakov's already married to Rachel, and then he's already married to Leah, and now he marries Rachel. Vayovo gam el Rachel. So he marries Rachel. Vayehav gam es Rachel mileah. And now again, here the Torah says that Yaakov Avinu loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. Now, is that a fault of Yaakov Avinu? Of course not. Of course not. Right? Now, remember, Yaakov Avinu never had any intention of marrying Leah. He was never the girl this was never supposed to happen. He got duped. He got tricked. Okay, so to his credit, he's going to perpetuate the relationship. But the Torah says now he married the love of his life. Now, what's interesting is the following. Very often in these stories, we inject our own personal narrative. So, for example, the Torah says, Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah, that God saw that Leah was hated, Vayiftach Esrachma, and therefore he blessed her with children. So we often assume that what does that mean? That when we picture this family, we picture Yaakov Avinu madly in love with Rachel Imenu. And how does he feel about Leah? He dislikes her. And by the way, it wouldn't be so surprising if he disliked her. Why? Because after all, she was in collusion with Lavan. Remember, there's this part of the story that we often overlook, which is at the end of the day, as much as Lavan was the trickster, Leah was the one who agreed to go forward with it. So Leah was the one who agreed to stand under that chuppah pretending to be her sister. Leah was the one who went home with Yaakov Avinu that night pretending to be her sister. So at the end of the day, she was complicit in the collusion. So if Yaakov Avinu would have despised her, again, he's a tzaddik, we would hope better, but again, it would certainly be at least understandable from our perspective. But that's not what the Torah says. What the Torah says is that Yaakov Avinu loved Rachel more than Leah, which tells us what? That he loved Leah as well. Take a look at number four. Rav Schwab, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, in his commentary on the parasha, says something beautiful. He says, "Hari mashmaos haposuk sha'ahav es Leah." It's clear in the text itself that Yaakov Avinu did love Leah. Just what? Avalo kimo Rachel. But he didn't love Leah as much as he loved Rachel. Ve'im kein, yesh levar perish ha-pasuk. Sorry, I should have included this sheet. The Torah says just one pasuk later, vayar Hashem ki snua Leah. Now, what does it mean? God saw that Leah was despised. Ve'chein ma'amar Leah ki shama Hashem ki snua anokhi. And Leah Imenu herself says that God has heard that I am despised. O yesh la'ayin, sheborosh Yaakov Avinu la'avrachas Hashem alo tisna es-achicha. It can't be that Yaakov Avinu despised Leah. Why? Again, Rav Shab quotes over here because there's a biblical prohibition to despise anyone. You're going to not despise anyone. And certainly Chazal explained that when it comes to one's wife, ohava kigufo, one must love his wife like he loves his own body. Umechabda yoser migufo. And you have to honor your wife more than you honor your own body. So Rav Schwab says, if we put this all together, one thing is clear. Yaakov Avinu does not despise Leah. To take it a step further, not does he not despise her, but rather what? He loves her. Now, what does that mean? What does love mean? All right, that's a different shear. But the point over here is that the Torah is clearly telling us that, yes, he definitely loves Rachel Imenu more, and no one's going to fault him for that. But lest you think that he despised Leah, lest you think that he didn't, not at all. Vayehav Yaakov es Rachel mi Leah. So then the obvious question becomes, if he does love Leah, then why does God say that he saw that Leah was despised? And why does Leah say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that I am despised? And Rav Schwab here makes an amazing observation. And it's an amazing observation about marriage. He says, 4b, Roim mizeh, shebechinas sina ben ish leishto, eino geder sinas ha'oivim. What do we see from here? That animosity within a marriage is different than animosity between friends or between acquaintances. How so? Listen to how profound this is. Ella sheba'avas isha acheres yoser mimeno, by loving another woman more than one's wife, harizu techashev kisina be'enei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Shav says something amazing. What is the most important, and the men should listen very carefully to this, what is the most important thing that a man has to accomplish in a marriage? The most important thing, that his wife has to know that she is the most important thing in his life. There is nothing more important to me than my wife. Not my career, not my parnasa, not even my children. For a proper marriage, a wife is on the top of the pyramid, of the top stone of the husband's pyramid. And Rav Schwab says something amazing. A man could love his wife very much, but if she does not feel that she is on the top of the pyramid, if she does not feel that she is the most important thing in his life, then you know how she feels? You know how she feels? She feels despised. So does Yaakov love Leah very much? Of course he does. But Leah Imenu knows that she is not the apple of his eye. She knows that as much as he cares for me, he loves me, he's going to take care of me, not a question. But I know that he doesn't love me the most. You know, in any other life relationship, if I have a friend, I don't have to be the most important friend in that friend's life, right? Even again, if I have a child, I don't have to be the most wonderful parent. It's okay whether my kid likes me or doesn't. Hopefully my child likes me. But at the end of the day, that relationship is there even if my child doesn't. In a marriage, a successful marriage only could exist, only thrives if a wife knows that she is the most important thing, hands down, nothing else eclipses her importance in the eyes of her husband. Says Rav Schwab, that's what's unfolding over here. Leah, so therefore, because Leah knows she's not number one, because she knows she's not the top of the pyramid, that's being despised. In the context of a marriage, not being number one is the equivalent of being trampled upon. So why is this important to us? Because take a look at number five. Now we begin to trace a pattern of behavior. So what does the Torah say? Vatahar Leah Vatela Deh. So watch this. So now remember, all these psukim are in progression. So number three, I pasuk Aleph, that Yaakov Avinu loves Rachel more than Leah. Does he love Leah? Of course he loves Leah. But she knows she's not number one in his life, and that's the marital equivalent of being despised. Then again, even and HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's interesting that what does God do? God validates Leah's pain. Right? God doesn't say to Leah, oh Leah, come on, get over it. Right? He still loves you well, so you're not the most beloved. Okay, get over it. You can't be number one in everything in life. God validates her pain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the pain of a woman who is not her husband's number one love. And what he does for her, the only thing he can do for her, is he opens her womb. He gives her children with the hope that perhaps with children now, the marital equilibrium maybe will become redistributed. Maybe now that she is the one who gives Yaakov Avinu sons, maybe that will be what shifts the tide. And that's what Leah hopes for as well. Look at number five. Vatahar Leah Batela Dain. Leah becomes pregnant. She gives birth to a son. Vatikra Shemo Reuven. And she calls him Reuven. Why? Ki amra, because she said, Ra'ah Hashem ba'ani. God has seen my pain. Ki ata ye'avani ishi. Maybe now my husband will love me. Now, my friends, do you understand what this means? You know, when you name a child, you know, we name a child, all right, after deceased relatives. You know, sometimes now people name like with more of like an anticipatory wish of what I want my child to be. But you could imagine like naming your child, you know, I had a rough childhood. However you would condense that into one name, right? Or I've really been unsuccessful in my career. Imagine naming your child because of your pain in life. It would be unheard of. First of all, what you saddle that kid with, right? So, right. So Reuven walks, you have to understand, Leah Imenu's pain, when somebody's pain is very raw, they have, let me say differently, part of the ability that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us in life is the ability to compartmentalize. Bless you. So what can we do? We can take difficult circumstances and we compartmentalize it. So we put it aside. I don't wear it on my sleeve because otherwise I have to go on in life. Bless you. But there are other times in life where my pain becomes so acute that I cannot compartmentalize it. I wear it on my sleeve. I can't. There's nothing else in life but my pain. That's the pain of Leah Imenu. So you can imagine now she has a child, Mazel Tov. She's given birth now to the first of the 12 Shvatim. The Imaos know that they are not just having children, but they are fulfilling a destiny. You would expect that she would be filled with incredible simcha. And how does she react to this circumstance? Maybe now my husband will love me. That there's pain. Even in the moment of what should be incredible joy, incredible simcha, for Leah Imenu, all she sees is marital neglect. Not because Yaakov is neglecting her. Not because Yaakov doesn't love her. Because she is not the most beloved. So maybe now I gave him a son. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even God sees my pain. Maybe now my husband will love me. Go on, number five, Pasuk Lamed Gimel 33. Vatar, she becomes pregnant again. Vatela Dein Vatomer. Ki Shama Hashem Ki Snua Anochi. Again, still the raw pain. This is son number two. Clearly, what's happened?
Nothing's changed.
Nothing has changed. The marital equilibrium has not been redistributed. Things are not better. Yaakov is no closer to her because now she's having sons. Still loves her, still cares for her, still looks out for her, but she's not number one. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you still see that I'm hated. Vayitain li gamezeh. And therefore you're giving me this one as well. Vatikra shmo Shimon. Pasuk Lamed Dalet 34. Vatahar od, she becomes pregnant again. Vateled bein. Vatomer ata hapam yilove ishele. Oh, this is it. This kid is going to be the one that tilts the scales in my favor. Because remember, again, this is son number three. The Imaos know that there are going to be 12 tribes. There are four wives. So they figure, again, each wife is going to have three sons. At this point, it's fine. Now I've done my part. I've given Yaakov Avinu three sons. I'm convinced that now he's going to be drawn to me. You know, it's interesting already. You see a progression. Because again, in this name, oh, well, let me just finish it. Now my husband's going to be drawn to me. Because now I've given birth to three sons. Al Kara Shemo Levi. Therefore, now I've named him Levi. Now, what do you see already over here? you see almost a little hint of optimism in Leah's voice. You see, by Reuven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw my suffering. Rei Hashem ba'ani. By Shimon, ki shama Hashem kisnu anochi. I'm despised. Levi already, it's a little bit more of a positive spin. This is son number three. I've contributed my maternal part to the building of the future Jewish people. Maybe now, things are going to shift. So already we see that the dynamic that we discussed already in back in number three, that Leah Imenu again realizes she's not number one, and therefore again, that makes her feel despised, even though in actuality she is not, but it makes her feel despised. And again, through these children, she hopes that there'll be some relationship that is established with her husband. But then something very dramatic happens. Take a look at number six, son number four. Vatahar od vateled ben. So what happens? Now she becomes pregnant again and she gives birth to a son. Vatomer hapa'am ode'es Hashem. And what happens? She says, this time I will thank God. Al kein kara shemo Yehuda. Therefore she called his name Yehuda. Vata'amod miledes. And she stopped giving birth. That was it. She had forced for now. She stopped giving birth. So what's dramatic about this? No mention of Yaakov Avinu, right? In sons 1 through 3, each of their names contain this anticipatory hope, this desire, this wish that somehow the birth of this child is going to repair my marriage. And yet by the time we come to son number four, in number six, what happens? No mention of Yaakov Avinu. No mention of repairing my marriage. No mention of becoming more beloved. What does Leah Imenu simply say? This time, I'm going to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She doesn't even mention Yaakov. She doesn't even mention the marriage. I'm going to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving me this son. So the obvious question is, what's changed? Why isn't Leah Imenu pining for that marital closeness with her husband anymore? Why is she not struggling and striving to become wife number one? What's changed between son number three and son number four? So the Mefarshim go in a couple of different directions. The Mefarshim say in number seven, you know, Rashi points out over here, Apam Odeh, Shenatalti Yosef Michalki. Because apparently at this point in time, now Leah Imenu realizes that, so to speak, she's gotten more than her share. Because again, like we said before, the assumption was four wives, 12 sons, 3 sons per wife. Now she has had 4. So she said, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'm overwhelmed by the fact that you've given me more than my share. So perhaps that feeling of being overwhelmed eclipses her feelings of lack of connectedness to her husband. Okay, one possibility. In number 8, the Targum Yonason says something different. Targum Yonason says, if you skip down to the second line, he says, Lemefap Malchin Umine Yafuk David Malko. So the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel has a very interesting approach. He says that Leah Imenu saw prophetically that from this son, Yehuda, would emanate the man by the name of David HaMelech. And from David HaMelech would ultimately issue forth who? The Melech HaMashiach, the Messianic line. And so the Targum Yonasan says that Leah Imenu is so overwhelmed that she just gave birth to the father of the tribe of kings, to the father of the tribe of Mashiach, that almost to a certain degree, she forgets about Yaakov Avinu for a little bit. She's so overwhelmed by the schus that she's just been given that Yaakov Avinu takes a backseat. Okay. But the problem is like this. All these, of course, are interesting. Rashi is interesting, Targum Yonasan. But for a woman who is wearing her pain on her sleeve, for a woman whose pain was so raw that it even seeped into the naming of her child. Remember, again, I can't say this strongly enough. When you name a child, anyone who's had the schus to bring a child into this world, everyone knows that the choosing of a name is a very big thing. It's a very big thing. Because, you know, the Gemara says, Minolan Dishma Garam. A name captures the essence of the individual. In fact, the Arizal says that when parents give a child a name, they're given a certain degree of Ruach HaKodesh. They're given a certain degree of prophecy. Because I have to give this little boy, this little girl a name that somehow is going to capture their essence for the rest of their life. How am I supposed to know that? I don't know them. I just met them a couple of days ago, and now suddenly I have to give them a name. You need Siyata Dishma, you need divine assistance. So the notion that Leah is naming her children for her pain is so profound. So the thought that suddenly that just goes away because David HaMelech is going to come from her, or because now she's been given more than her lot, is hard to really comprehend for a woman who's clearly marked by such tangible pain. So perhaps this is another approach. Look at number 9. The Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara says, Va'om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Miyom shebara kodesh baruch hu es olamo, from the day that God created this world, lo haya adam shehodi la kodesh baruch hu ad shebas saleh b'hodaso. No one ever thanked God. From the day that God created the world, no one ever said thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu until Leah. Until Leah Imenu came along and she said, Hapam Odes Hashem, this time I will thank God. No one ever thanked God before. Ad Shebas Leah B'Odaso Shne'emar Hapam Odes Hashem. Okay, so number 10, again, Rav Schwab asks a very simple question because it sounds quite strange. V'yesh la'ayin v'chilo hodu Abram Yitzchak v'yahu es HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is that possible? No one ever said thank you. Avram never said thank you for Yitzchak, right? Or Yitzchak never said thank you for the various miracles of his life. Yaakov, no one ever said thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Noach didn't say thank you when he got off the Teva and he put his feet on solid ground. Adam didn't say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he was ultimately spared. No one ever said thank you? Sounds strange. So Rav Schwab advances an incredible insight. Look at paragraph B. Hine. Bahalendos hakodemes, hayayin kriyas hashemos begeder tefila ala osiv. So Schwab says, pointing out what we pointed out before, if you look at the first three sons, so what do all their names represent? They are all anticipatory desires for the future, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ki atoyev Ruvein, maybe now my husband will love me. Shimon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has seen that I'm hated, maybe my husband will love me more now. Levi, now my husband's, every single child that's named is for a desire about how this child is going to change the marital framework, right? It's not a new thing. People to this day, still they have children with the expectation that somehow if they're experiencing marital problems, that somehow children will change mouth. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. But that's what Leah Imenu was hoping. So every single child, she hopes, this is going to be the game changer. This is going to be the one that's going to bring my husband to me and exclusively to me, to the exclusion of my sister. Let my sister Rachel be number two. I've been number two long enough. Let her be number two. I'll be number one. Every single name is for some future anticipatory desire. And says Rashab something amazing. And he quotes it. Ki ato yevani ishi. Now my husband will love me. Ha pami lavei ishi alai. Now, one thing that's clear, which is what, says Rav Schwab, it didn't work. Her tefillos were not answered. As much as she wanted to be the number one in Yaakov's life, she wanted to be the top of Yaakov in his permission, she wanted to know that she was the most important thing in his life, it didn't happen. Not after Reuven, not after Shimon, not after Levi. Listen to what Rav Schwab says. V'lochim, number 10, halfway down in the paragraph, that's B, four lines into the paragraph B. V'lochim, achshov b'leidas Yehuda lo hispala lo'od. So Schwab makes an amazing observation. Therefore, when Yehuda is born, she stops asking. When Yehuda is born, Leah Imenu no longer vies to be the number one in her husband's heart. Not because she doesn't want it, but rather why? Because she knows it's not going to happen. So what happens? She doesn't ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no anticipatory prayer that maybe this fourth son is going to make my husband love me more or bring me closer to him. No. Elo amra, hapam odes Hashem. Rather, what does she say? This time, I will thank God. And listen to how profound this is. Bechol matzav shehu. I have to learn to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for whatever my circumstances may be. You see, late, I think what's unfolding here is something truly amazing. Whether God gives me my request and makes me beloved in my husband's eyes, or God denies that request and I'm simply always going to be wife number two. What Leah Imenu was taking out Kadosh Baruch Hu was for what? Was for what she had and was no longer dwelling on what she did not. Lo haisa ba'olam ad shebasai. So amazingly enough, Rav Schwab understands that what the Gemara is actually saying is that Leah Imenu reaches a new level of gratitude. You see, very often, gratitude is within a framework of what it is that I want. So when do I thank God? When something goes according to my plan. What Leah Imenu was the first person to do was to acknowledge, it's nothing's going according to my plan. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I still thank you for what it is that you have given me. That was the unique hodah, the unique thanksgiving of Leah Imenu. And I think to take it a step further, I think what's unfolded over here also is that perhaps Leah Imenu has a little bit of an awakening, because she realizes the truth is, I really didn't properly appreciate the birth of my first three children. Why? Because I was so focused on becoming the number one in Yaakov's heart that I didn't even fully focus on the beautiful bracha of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. And the proof to that is their name reflects my pain. Their name doesn't reflect my joy. Their name doesn't reflect my confidence that they're going to become something great. Their name doesn't reflect any type of maternal desire or aspiration for their personal greatness. Their name reflects my pain. And what happens over here, says Rav Schwab, is that by the time that Leah Imenu gets to Yehuda, she resigns herself to the fact that she is never going to be wife number one. It's not going to happen. Yaakov Avinu is never going to love her the way he loves her sister. So Leah Imenu realizes, I have a choice. I could continue to cry for it. I could continue to beg for it. I could continue to name my children reflecting my pain. But you know what? It's not going to get me anywhere. Instead, let me accept my new reality. I will never be wife number one. What I will be able to be is a strong, dominant aim. I will be able to be a strong, dominant, and powerful maternal presence. I'll have an opportunity to shape the future of the Jewish people. I'll have an opportunity to forge the identities of some of the most important tribes of the Jewish people. But I will never be the number one in his heart. And therefore, she says, Hapam Odes Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. Thank you for everything you've given me. I'm not thanking you because I want something different, because nothing's really going to change. This circumstance is what it is. But thank you for the beautiful brachos that you have given me. And so what unfolds over here after the birth of son number four is that it appears that Leah Imenu makes peace with her position and her station within the house of Yaakov Avinu. I'm not going to ask anymore. I'm not going to vie for his attention anymore. I'm not going to try to usurp my sister's position in the home. It is what it is, and I accept it. I no longer rally against it, and instead what I have to focus on is seeing the bracha in my circumstances, and seeing the bracha in the life that I do have. I can't ignore the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me four beautiful brachos. That's what I need to focus on, and I somehow have to accept the fact that my husband will never love me like Rachel. Now, so it appears like we've established some level of closure over here. Leah is number two, Rachel is number one, Rachel knows she's number one, and Leah has now accepted that she is number two. Except, things appear to resurface. So let's fast forward a little bit. So if you remember again, going back to number one for just a moment, just to reorient ourselves. So what happened in number one? Let's read it once more. That number, then we're going to come back to 12. So what happens? So what happened? Remember, it's harvest time. Reuven goes out. He brings back these dudaim. He brings it to Leah, his mother. Rachel says to Leah, can I have some of the dudaim? And Leah says, it's not enough that you've taken my husband, you also want the dudaim. And Rachel says, fine, you can have him tonight. So what's unfolding over here? So first of all, what are these dudaim? So if you take a look, interestingly enough, the Mefarshim go in all different directions. So number 12, the Medrash writes, v'ha'inyon modiya she'osan dudaim peros, they were fruit. Rashi says, interestingly enough, sigli, esef hu ubalashon yishmael, yasmin, jasmine. Jasmine, okay, so was it food? Was it a sweet-smelling jasmine? 14, the Rashbam says it was figs, but now we come to 15. And here the Malbim blows this story wide open. And watch this. Vayelech Reuven. Yesaper Rishona, Tzidkas Reuven. The first thing the Torah tells us in this episode is the righteousness of Reuven. Shahalach bimei kitzir chitim, because he went out during the harvest season. Sha'as hasodos mulim kol migad demecholtuv. So interestingly enough, so Reuven goes out to the field, and it's harvest season, which means the fields are filled with all kinds of things. But Reuven was very careful about other people's property. So the only thing he takes is what? Something that grows wildly, this dudaim. He made sure to only take from things that are hefker, or things that are ownerless. Okay, what are these dudaim? Number 15, zos shenis shehevi osam elea imo. And little Reuven, and when I say little Reuven, because if you skip down to 16 for just one moment, keep your place in 15, but look at 16. So look what the Sfarno says. How old was Reuven when this happened? He was, Ben Dalit Oheshonim. He wasn't more than 4 or 5. Now watch this. Watch this. So little Reuben, who's 4 or 5, what does he do? He brings these dudoim to his mother. Now why? Now again, so you can imagine, maybe it's like, you know, like all kids, they go out, they'll pick the dandelions or whatever it is. They'll bring it. Look, mom, look what I brought for you. Listen to what little 4-year-old Reuben does. Shahadudoim misugalim leholada. What did people use dudoim for in biblical times? For fertility. Fertility. It was considered to be an herb that aided in female fertility. V'rotza sheteled she'imo tolid od banim. What did 4-year-old Reuven, this is going to blow you away. What did 4-year-old Reuven want? He wanted his mother to have more children. Now remember, 4-year-old Reuven already has 2 little brothers. So says the Malbim something amazing. Hefich derech ha'olam. She'yirtu she'yihiyu yachid li'imo. You know, what's interesting about this is the opposite of children. Because very often, children love the attention. Children love the attention that they got. That's why very often, when you have one child, and then if person's zochet to have a second child, there's a little bit of friction in the beginning over there, because suddenly now, the child, the oldest child, not the only child. I was the apple of the parent's eye. So little Reuven, who's 4 years old, wants, brings the dudoim, mommy here. I know how much you want to have more children. I want you, I, 4-year-old Reuven, want you to have more children. The who rotza b'toalasa. And why does little Reuven want his mother to have more children? Because little Reuven sees how miserable his mother is. Because he realizes that even, you know, children are very perceptive, very perceptive. And that's why children pick up, adults very often think that if they don't argue in front of their children, parents, even if they don't argue in front of their children, so the children think that everything's fine. It's not true. Children have a very keen sense for marital tension. They know when something is not right. So Reuven understands that his mother is not happy. He understands whatever a 4-year-old could understand, but he understands that, you know, I see that Abba does not spend all of his time with my mother. He spends much more time with my aunt, with Rachel. Hey, he picks up on this. So what does he do? He brings these dudoim to his mother, a fertility chip. Mother, I know you'll find happiness in life because you'll actualize your maternal identity by having more children. So now we see these dudoim, not just ordinary flowers. They're fertility treatments. V'Rachel, oh. So now we understand why Rachel Imenu wants the dudoim. Why does she want the dudoim? V'Rachel, Choshva sha'al yidei segulas hadudoim tis'aber v'telit v'lachin amra t'ni no li miduda ebenech. So says the Malbim, now we know why Rachel Imenu wants the dudoim, because Rachel Imenu, we see Rachel Imenu, interestingly enough, has a husband. Her husband loves her. She is the top of his pyramid. But it's amazing. It's amazing that each wife has what the other does not. Leah has children, but no love of frills. She doesn't have the love of her husband. Rachel has the love of her husband, but doesn't have children. She sees little Reuven bring these dudoim to his mother, and she says to Leah, can I have some? Can I have some? You know that I'm struggling with my infertility. You know that I'm struggling with the fact that I have not had children. Can I have some of your dudoim? So now here's where everything blows up. So what happens in number 17? So remember again, what does Leah Imenu respond? Leah says, "Hamaat kachteich es yishi. Is it not enough that you've taken my husband? Now you want to go ahead and take my dudoim?" So look what the Midrash says. Amar Leah l'Rachel, "Lo dayecha shelakachta es yishi shenimshach libo acharecha." Now listen to these words. Leah Imenu says to Rachel, "Is it not enough that you've taken my husband? That you've stolen his heart?" Can you imagine how this is unfolding? "Is not enough that you've taken my husband, that you've stolen his heart?" Amra Rachel, and Rachel responds back, "Leah, excuse me. Lo Leah Isheikh, Elohu Ishi. Leah, let's be clear on one thing. He's my husband first." What Rachel Imenu is saying to Leah, and she goes on, "Ba'avuri Babi Be'er Sheva. He came because of me from Be'er Sheva." Now, what does that mean? Now, Yaakov Avinu didn't know of Rachel when he came from Be'er Sheva. Remember, he was running away from home. But what was she saying? His whole destiny is intertwined with mine. The whole reason he came to our father's house was not for you. It was for me. Leah, You know the only reason you're married to him? The only reason he didn't choose you. The only reason he's married to you is because on the day of the wedding, I gave you the siman. Remember, the Medrash says that Yaakov already was concerned about the fact that Lavan was going to try to pull something. He made siman, and whatever these signals were with Leah Imenu. So the Medrash writes that Leah is about to be taken to be married to Yaakov, and Rachel knows if she doesn't give her the siman, and Yaakov's going to know it's not her. She gives the siman. So listen to this dialogue. So Leah Imenu lashes out at Rachel. I don't understand. Do you want everything? Do you want everything? You've taken my husband. I don't have a marriage because of you. You've stolen his heart from me. And now you want to do that. Nobody cares about the dudam in reality. But it's what it represents. You're taking everything from me. It's not enough that you have my husband. Now, again, because remember what the dudam represented also, besides being a fertility treatment, it's a token of affection from her child. So what Leah Imenu says is, you've stolen my husband's affection from me, and now you want to take the token of my child's affection from me? What kind of person are you? And Rachel responds, what kind of person am I? What are you even doing here? What? Why are you even in this marriage? Yaakov wasn't supposed to marry you. You're not part of his destiny. He came from Beersheba because of me. The only reason you're here is because I gave you the simanim. And look what happens. Lefi shaya minak. So v'lachein yishkav ima chalayla. So what does Rachel say to Leah? Fine. You think I stole him from you? He's yours. He's yours. Because what Rachel knows, it's a shtach. Why is it a shtach? It's a shtach because what she's saying to Leah is, even if he spends the night with you, you know he's coming back to me. So meaning even, okay, you could have him tonight. Fine, that's what you want. He's yours. But at the end of the day, don't think that one night is going to change anything. So a very dramatic emotion. By the way, the good news, Yaakov Avinu is very lucky that he's not home. That's all I can say. He is out in the field. He is out in the field because I Baruch, that's called Hashkacha Pratis. I'm saying, you know, myself, who knows? So, but it doesn't stop there. Look. I'm sorry? No, he's in the field. Torah says he's in the field. Number 18, the Medrash says the following. It goes on. So look, if you piece all these pieces of the Medrash together, there's an ongoing dialogue. So Leah retorts back. You know, Leah, Rachel, you want to say that he's your bashert. You want to say that he's your destiny. He came from. I married him first. Whatever the circumstances. Yes, thank you. You're a balas chesed. You gave me the siman and wonderful. I married him first. Va'at nichnasta v'na'asis li tsara. You came into this marriage second. You willingly came into this, becoming a co-wife, even though you knew that you would take away any chance of happiness I had at this marriage. And look at number 19. So the Chizkuni takes it one step further. So the Chizkuni writes, skip to number 20. So what does Leah say to Rachel? So you know what Leah says to Rachel? And this is where everything blows up. You should have refused the proposal in marriage. After Yaakov married me, this is Leah talking, you should have said, Yaakov, I'm sorry you married my sister. I'm sorry things happen like this. But the truth is, it's not a good idea for me to marry you. So what Leah Imenu accuses Rachel of is being selfish. You, and again, which of course is the incredible irony, because Rachel Imenu engages in the ultimate act of selflessness. But what Leah Imenu says essentially is, if you were really so selfless, you would have walked away from the marriage in totality. Because it's very nice that you allowed me to marry Yaakov. But what did I get for it? I'm left with a lifetime of marital unhappiness. I'm left with a lifetime of marital unfulfillment. So it's very nice that you let me marry him first. But if you really wanted to be selfless, you should have walked away. You should have never, when he said, Rachel, I still want to marry you, the love of my life, you can say, Yaakov, I'm sorry, but it's just not meant to my sister. She's wonderful, and you should have walked away. But by you entering into this marriage after I was already married to Yaakov Avinu, I'm sorry, Rachel, that's an unforgivable offense. So what's happening over here? So this is what's happening in this episode? This is the first time that the sisters have it out. Again, now remember, I want to point something out. This Naomi said also, you see the poles. This is in contradistinction. It's the polar opposite of Rav Hirsch. Remember, Rav Hirsch sees this whole episode as what? As wonderful, like sisterly camaraderie. They're getting along. They're cracking jokes. They're living together in such close, what he calls confidential intimacy. And meanwhile, again, Rav Hirsch would say, oh, no. You know, essentially what's happened over here is everyone's been living in a pressure cooker. And what happened? And finally, this was the event. This was the event. And what was the trigger? The trigger was, for Leah, what she saw was another attempt by Rachel to steal someone's affection from her. You stole my husband. You stole my husband. You should have never married him. Once I married him, you should have walked away. And now, what are you trying to do? You're trying to steal the affection of my son as well. And everything blows up. Rachel Yemina responds, what are you talking about? He's not even really yours. He's mine. You're only here. You're only in this ultimately because I decided to do something nice for you. But you don't really even have a seat at the table. But Shebregis, you're upset? Fine. Let him come to your tent tonight, knowing full well that his allegiance will still be with me. But here's what's amazing. There's one more piece to this story. Take a look at 21. Vayovo Yaakov min hasod ba'erev. So what happens? The good news is that Yaakov doesn't come home till late that night. So he stays out late. I just want to point something out, by the way. I want to be clear on this. The Imos were not petty people. The Imos were righteous women beyond imagination. But they were human beings. And that's what the Torah constantly see. We often assume that if somebody is a tzaddik, then it must mean that they have no human faults. If somebody's really a tzaddik, then it must mean that they're uber human. But that doesn't make sense, because if you're a human being, you have faults. If you're a human being, you have frailties. The reason why the Avos and the Imos are role models for us is because they were human beings who chose to become something great. But in the midst of becoming something great, they also had to contend with a lot of different things. And so the Torah is telling us over here about the animosity that finally bubbled over between the sisters. But look how it ends. It's quite amazing. So number 20, 21. Vayavo Yaakov min hasodeh. But Yaakov comes home late that night. Vateitzei Leah likraso. And Leah runs out to greet him. Vatomer Eli tavo. You're coming tonight with me. Ki sachor sichartichah biduda ebeni. Now again, and this phraseology is so strong. Literally, Because I bought you. The English translation over here is I've hired. But what it really means is I've paid for the rights for you, with you, right? If with the dudam of my son, Vayishkav ima balailahu, and he spends the night with her, Vayishma lakim aleah, God once again hears Leah, Vatar vatelbin, and she becomes pregnant and has her fifth son. Now, if you look at 22, the Netziv makes an amazing observation. The Netziv says, Vateitzei Leah likraso, afagav shelo haya midas tznius. Now, this is very strange, that Leah Imenu runs out into the field and says to Yaakov, you're coming home with me tonight. What a strange episode. What a strange episode. You know, again, we know that within Judaism has a framework for everything, including sexuality. And within sexuality, there is a very important concept of tznius, of modesty. So it's strange that Leah Imenu runs out into the field and the first thing she says to her husband is, you're coming to my tent tonight. So the emek to the Netziv says something amazing. He says, Miko Mokom, get ready for this. Noach Hayala, Lahakil Bichvoda. It was better for her to Lahakil Bichvoda means to pay a little less attention to her own dignity. Mishetisbayish es Rachel Bivo Yaakov li Ohala, the Achakach Yetze. So this is astounding. So the Netziv says, what was Leah Imenu concerned about? Leah Imenu was concerned about that. What's going to happen? If Yaakov Avinu comes home first, comes into the home camp, where is Yaakov Avinu going to go? Where is he going to go? He's going to go to the tent of Rachel. To go to the tent of Rachel, and then for Rachel to say, I'm sorry, you're not sleeping here tonight, and for him to leave would be humiliating for her sister. So Leah Imenu figures, you know what? Let me head him off at the pass. Let me run out to the field and tell him already what has occurred so that I should not embarrass my sister. So I'd rather embarrass myself. So what's amazing? What's just occurred? This, you know, sometimes the key to conflict resolution is a good fight. Sometimes you just have to have it out. And amazingly enough, in the moment after Rachel and Leah have it out, Leah Imenu, the big sister, is once again concerned for the covet of her younger sister. See, even though again they just had this brutal war of words, a very brutal war of words, Leah does not want her younger sister to be embarrassed, so she runs out to greet Yaakov, and again, speaks in a little bit of almost like a like inappropriate way, and says, okay, you're coming with me tonight, because I bought the conjugal right with you for the dudan, for the flowers of my son. But if that's what it means to save my sister from humiliation, that's what I'm willing to do. Take this a step further. And I just have to warn you, this medrash is going to blow you away. The medrash writes, Vateta Elikra, so number 23, Leah went out to greet Yaakov, Yotzas, Mikushetes Kizona. So Medrash writes, Leah Imenu went out, literally like dressed up like a Zona, like a harlot. What does that mean? It's Leah Imenu. So look, so number 24, there's a beautiful new chumash that came out. I mean, there's no new chumash that comes out. You pretty much have the same chumash. But there's a new commentary called, it's the Chumash Mesoras Harab. So what happens is a team of scholars took the time to compile all of Rav Soloveitchik's, because Rav Soloveitchik didn't write a perush on chumash. But the Rav writes about different essays and different essays. So they essentially, somebody took from the Rav's different works and compiled it in a Chumash. So you can open up the Chumash, you can see, so this is from this new Chumash. So the Rav comments on this Medrash, because obviously this is a startling Medrash. What does it mean? You want to say that Leah Imenu dressed up to entice her husband, that Leah Imenu dressed up, meaning we have concepts like that about a wife dressing up in a way to entice, to make her husband desire her. Okay, I understand that, but to say Mikushetes Kizona, is a very strange thing. So look what the Rav writes. The Medrash does not mean to be taken literally. It is an analogy in the sense of fearlessness, haste, boldness, and occasionally even impotence. Leah's exchange with Rachel in regard to the Dudaim reflects assertiveness. Leah was undeterred to take any legitimate steps to realize her dream. Leah did not have the patience to wait for Yaakov. She hastened his arrival. Leah went out to greet Yaakov, whom she loved so much, and out of their union that night, God gave her a great and wonderful gift. Her son, Yisachar, a tribe of the nation. So the Rav says something amazing. What does it mean, Kushetes Kizona? You know, the Zona has one thing that she has to accomplish, right? So the Zona, again, has one particular task. She's very, what's the right word? Single-minded, good, right? Purposeful, driven. Right? She has one task, and that, so the Rav says that's what it means, Mikushetes Kizona. That Leah Imenu was driven. That Leah Imenu realizes that what has to be done, and amazingly enough, what's happening over here is the fact that the Rav is describing, what the Medrash is describing, is she is of a single mind. She is purposeful just like the Zona. What does that mean? Leah Imenu is not going out to Yaakov because she's expecting romance. She's not going out to Yaakov because she's seeking to establish a more loving and passionate relationship. She's not going out to Yaakov because she's trying to win over his heart. Why? Because she knows not going to happen. She knows that Rachel's right. She knows that even if Yaakov is with her tonight, tomorrow he's going right back to Rachel. So why does she run out to greet him? Because Yaakov, my role is not to be your number one wife. My role is to be the number one mother. My role is to be the dominant matriarch of this home. And Leah Imenu is the dominant matriarch. Interestingly enough, the roles switch. Rachel Imenu does become the dominant matriarch. You know when? You know when, interestingly enough? When? In the story of Rus. In the story of Rus, if you remember again, just for 1 minute, if you remember again the story of Rus, when Boaz finally marries Rus, so they give Boaz, the townspeople give Boaz and Rus a bracha. And what do they say? What do they say to Boaz? They say to Boaz that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make Rus ki Rachel v'Leia. And who did they place first? Rachel. And the commentaries say that at that point in time, the tribes agreed that Rachel was to be the dominant one. Ultimately, why? Well, okay, we'll get into the difference of the why. The why is a different shear. So, but right now, for our purposes right now in history, so at this point in time, Leah Imenu realizes that her job is to be the dominant matriarchal personality. So again, we see something amazing unfolding. So the sisters have this major blow up, and one of two things occur as a result. Either that because of the blow up, they're able to repair the relationship, and so the first thing that happens afterwards is that Leah wants to save her sister from embarrassment, doesn't want Yaakov coming home, going into Rachel's tent, and then leaving Rachel's tent, and therefore she runs out to the field and greets him, even though what? Even though it's a little bit inappropriate, it's a little bit prost, it's a little bit too aggressive. That's possibility one. Or possibility two is that, no, after having it out with her sister, Mikushetes Kizona. So at the end of the day, and it's interesting also, maybe the imagery is that, well, Mikushetes Kizona means she's driven. She's driven. She's purposeful. I'm not going to become the wife number one. I know that, and I accept that. But you know what I am going to be? I'm going to be the number one matriarch. So I don't expect this night with Yaakov to yield anything more than a pregnancy. But it's that pregnancy that will allow me to go ahead and assert my role as the dominant matriarchal personality in this family. So what comes out if we bring this all together is there are a number of incredible lessons, besides the fact that it's just exceptionally dramatic. But remember, this Torah stories are not for story's sake. The Torah's stories are here to teach us very important lessons. So I think the major lesson, that two major lessons that come out from this episode of Rachel and from this Dudaim, is that number one, it's important to deal with relationship issues. Sometimes there's tension in a relationship, whether it's in a marriage, whether it's between parents and children, whether it's with friends, there are tensions, and it's inevitable. Even in the best relationships, there are tensions that occur. And more often than not, most people are conflict averse. Most people don't like to engage in conflict. So instead, what do we do? What do? We sweep things under the rug. We choose not to deal with it, with the hope that if we don't deal with it, what'll happen? Miraculously, somehow, some way, someone's going to take some major life vacuum, just suck it all away, and it's going to be done, and mamish, everything's going to be restored. So, and by the way, that's what Rachel and Leah tried to do. Rachel and Leah, for years, buried this, right? Leah's walking around feeling unloved. The only person who knows Leah's unloved is who? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rachel doesn't even know. How does Rachel know? Leah's never said anything. Maybe Rachel knows about it, but Rachel probably chooses not to think about it either because it's too painful. It's too difficult because the dynamic is compounded by the fact that Leah Imenu Baruch Hashem is fruitful and having children and Rachel is not. So Rachel's got the love, no children. Leah has no love, but has children. And there's this incredible, and everybody's just walking around pretending that everything is okay until it blows up. Again, the Dudaim, if you think about it, is a relatively minor event. You know, sometimes you have in life where you have like a disagreement or an argument over something little, and then suddenly it snowballs into something massive. Why does that happen? Because there were many, many, many other issues that were lurking beneath the surface. And this was just the trigger point. This was the volcano. This was the opening that allowed everything to erupt. So lesson number one that we learned from this episode is deal with your life relationship issues. There so often there are things simmering beneath the surface. And if you just keep it there, the only thing that happens is it continues to fester. And one day it will erupt. And when it does erupt, be prepared for the consequences. Because sometimes if you allow it to fester too much, it erupts in such a horrific way that you can't repair the relationship. The Torah is giving us this model to teach us in this case what not to do. Don't let the tension simmer. Don't let the tension build up. Confront the relationship issues while they're still confrontable. Confront the relationship issues before they turn into some terrible verbal exchange that could potentially derail a relationship. Oh, and why? Because only once the issue is addressed is there a chance for healing. While there are issues simmering beneath the surface, you can't repair a relationship. Only once you're brave enough to confront the real issues, then you can begin the repair. As we see over here, only once Rachel and Leah have this out, a really brutal verbal exchange, suddenly again in the aftermath, they're sisters again. In the aftermath, each one accepting their role. In the aftermath, each one accepting their duty. In the aftermath, Leah, the big sister who felt wronged, is still looking out for the covet of her little sister Leah. That's lesson number one. Deal with your life relationship issues. Don't let them simmer beneath the surface and don't expect them to take care of themselves. Number two, sometimes you have to accept certain compromised realities in life. And what does this mean? We all have a dream for what we want life to be. We all have a dream for what we want to be. We have goals, we have aspirations, and sometimes things happen in life. And the way I wanted life to be is not going to be the way it materializes. Sometimes things change, and that could be for a variety of reasons. That could be because the dream that I had maybe was never the right dream. or it could be because I made certain mistakes, or I didn't take advantage of certain opportunities. But sometimes we are faced with the reality that the life that I wanted is not going to be the life that I have. And so in that moment, a person has a choice. Some people spend all of their life energies rallying and crying and lamenting the fact that I'm never going to have the life that I want. And you know what that gets you? You know what that gets you? Zero. And so for the rest of your, there are people who go through the entire life, something didn't go right for them and it's not fair and it's not right. Good, I'm going to spend every morsel of emotional energy lamenting Zillow fair. It's not right. I deserve better. Okay, good. Hatzlacha with that, because you're not going to get anywhere with it. Instead, what a person has to have is the courage to accept that sometimes life doesn't go according to plan. Sometimes we are saddled with new realities that we never anticipated. And the question is now, how do I maximize my current realities? Leah Imenu wanted nothing more than to be wife number one, which, by the way, is a very legitimate request, is a very understandable aspiration in marriage. It's the way all Leah was asking for was to be in a normal marriage with a normal husband, with a normal love. That's all she wanted. And so son number one, she buys for it. It's not going to happen. Son number two, son number three. And finally, what happens? Leah Imenu realizes, I have a choice. The choice is I could spend the rest of my life lamenting the love that I don't have and pining for it so badly. And what? And what am I going to get for it? Nothing. Or I could say, Hapam Odes Hashem. Or I could say, Noach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the life you've given me. Okay, I don't know if it's not the life I would have chosen, but it's the life that I've got. And now I have to figure out how to maximize my current circumstances. And that's how the pasuk ends. That's why, again, that's why the Torah says, Vateitse Leah Likraso. The great, amazing part about this is by the time this story ends, yes, Leah's had it out with her sister, major fight, major exchange of words. Hopefully now the relationship could be salvaged. And now how does the story end? Leah accepts her role. It's not what I wanted. It's not what I signed up for. It's not what I ever dreamed about my life would be, but this is what it is. And now the only question is, how do I maximize my abilities, my potential, my kochos in my current circumstances? Ma'asa avosim labanim. What occurs within Sefer Bereishis, these lessons that the Torah teaches us in these stories are so prevalent to this very day. Important to deal with life issues. Don't let the tension simmer beneath the surface. Make sure to deal with the tension within relationships before it explodes like an emotional volcano. Because if you let that happen, you may not be able to repair it. And number two, accept the fact that sometimes the life you want is not the life you get. And don't spend your energy lamenting your new circumstances, but instead put all of your kochos to maximizing your circumstances. All right, let's stop over here. There's Marav in the base madrash for whoever needs.